I'm Dr. Casey Mixon, Assistant Professor at Valdosta State University's Psychology, Counseling, and Family Therapy Department and Project Director for the Military Families Learning Network Family Development Team. Along with Barry Sobelson, Licensed Family Therapist and MFLN Family Development Programming Coordinator, we invite you to join us for our anchored podcast conversations. We started this podcast in hopes to support and inspire those connected to military families. Each episode focuses on real-life struggles and practical solutions to lessen the harmful ripple effects. We invite you to sit back, relax, and get anchored with us.
According to statistics in the 2016 Demographics Profile of the Military Community, there were a total of 55,360 single parents, 35,953 fathers, and 19,407 mothers on active duty, making up approximately 4% of the active duty military population. With this statistic in mind, we felt that it was important to discuss the topic of single parenthood in the military, especially considering the struggles that single parents, even in the civilian sector, face. Single parents are often faced with the task of tackling day-to-day struggles and decision-making responsibilities of raising children without the consistent support of a partner. Working parents are further tasked with the duties of their jobs within both the military and civilian communities. We are fortunate to have multiple guests, each who have graciously agreed to share their personal stories of navigating the double duties of single parenthood and military service. While all of these stories are very different, you will see some similarities interwoven throughout each. We hope that you, our listeners, will find these stories insightful, inspirational, and meaningful in some way. Our first guest today is Lieutenant Colonel Jen Opke, who is currently the Director of Operations of the 347 Rescue Group's Operation Support Squadron, Air Combat Command, Moody Air Force Base, Georgia. She is also an instructor combat search and rescue helicopter pilot. In addition to her duties to the Air Force, Jen also has the job title and responsibilities of mother to a five-year-old little boy. Jen, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you doing this episode with us.
Absolutely, no problem. Thank you for having me.
We would love for you to tell us a little bit about what led you to joining the Air Force.
So I was a military brat. My dad was in the Army, and I thought for sure that I wanted to join the Army. I was all about it. And my father thought I should go to college, and explained to me that he did not have the finances to pay for regular school. So he offered up the military academy. So of course my first thought was West Point. And I worked really hard to get into West Point. And one day he said, well, we're just gonna go visit the campuses. West Point, Air Force Academy, the Naval Academy, and the Coast Guard Academy, which was awesome. So he took me to all the campuses and I went to the Air Force Academy and saw it was big and beautiful and there's blue skies and up on the hill and it was amazing. And then he took me to West Point and it was dark and gloomy and had bars on all the windows for the places where people were sleeping for their cadets. And then the Naval Academy was nice. And then the Coast Guard Academy was normal. So the Air Force Academy just had me as soon as I saw it. And I started working towards that. So thank goodness he did, because otherwise I would be in a ditch somewhere with a Kevlar helmet thinking I was General Grant.
That's a good story. It's funny how we often have our minds set on one thing and then something like bars on a window can deter us from that and lead us in a different direction, right?
A whole another direction. Sorry, West Point.
So now that we talked about how you quote unquote landed, you like my pun there, my play on words, how you landed in the Air Force, I'd love for you to tell us about your journey to motherhood.
Okay. That's a good question. I still think about how I got there. It was on purpose, even though it was still a surprise. I met my husband after about 10 years in the Air Force. I thought that it was the right time in our life to have a baby. And, you know, there's a lot of discussions. I love being a helicopter pilot, and that requires a lot of deployments and a lot of on the roads and a lot of TDYs. So he and I discussed it and made a conscious decision that he would be the primary stay at home and I would have a baby. So we had our son and he's beautiful. He's amazing. And I'm really blessed. I'm really glad that we did do that when we decided to, because otherwise I was going to wait until after my career was over. So it was a blessing, a huge blessing. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that I had him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's kind of a non-traditional view that your husband had at the time. And so just to kind of piggyback on that, when you and I first met each other, you said something to me that really struck my curiosity. You mentioned that the military culture is built around the nuclear family.
where the military member works and the spouse stays at home with the kids, and the spouse is usually a female.
Yeah, we came to find that out pretty quickly, the differences in all the cultures. It's not just the military, it's the spouses also carry this culture and kind of a badge of honor for themselves that it's mostly female spouses that are married to military members. And so, you know, modernly, it's not that way so much any longer. And I don't know that it was a determining factor in our decision to part, but it did not help to keep us together. The military was built to take care of a wife versus a husband, and to embrace a husband versus a wife. And I think that there's a lot of people that feel that. I don't know that a lot of people are talking about it. And I feel like if we did talk about it just a little bit more, maybe we could solve some of those problems.
Mm-hmm. But he obviously talked about it with you.
Constantly.
Yeah.
It was a big stressor for us. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, the spouse club was all female. The activities they did were all for women. It was not inviting for him. To his defense, he's very masculine. He's a construction worker, and that's kind of what he knows, is that lifestyle. And they also have a certain culture about them that is not incompatible, but not very compatible with sure. military life. Even though they're mobile and he could find work anywhere, it was not on his timetable and it wasn't on his expectations. And so he decided it wasn't for him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that came as a big surprise for him, but did it also come as a big surprise for you? Or did you kind of see the culture in this way well before he experienced it?
I did, but I didn't recognize how it would affect him. And I didn't know how to support him in that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an expectation that in the military, we deploy, we go TDY, we are the ones that are always on call to the military. And you'll see some men who have up on their Facebook or on their Instagram of like the military or the army, the Air Force is the never satisfied mistress, you know? And it's true. I mean, we did sign up for this. We signed up to support our country and be deployable at any time, but that expectation's not on our spouses. There are spouses that accept it, but there's others that don't. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to say that we need to change our model, but sure. It's just something to take into consideration.
And there's certainly a very big learning curve there. Yes. That both, it sounds to me, the service member and the spouse experience. It looks a lot different when you're actually in the trenches, so to speak, and experiencing it on a daily basis. So I can imagine that probably was a lot of pressure for you, too.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
To try to juggle that.
I think that, and I hope that women hear this, and maybe I hope it touches somebody, but it's something I've really thought about a lot, is that we have put so much pressure on ourselves as women to do everything. You know, be the great mother, be the great support, be the great worker, you know, reach to the top, be the best, be the best at everything. And it's so stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And the people around us feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt like that was definitely contributing to the stress of the relationship, the whole expectation on myself to do better, to be better.
Sure. To fix it.
To fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. So it clearly takes a lot of drive, dedication, and resolve, among other things, for you to have gotten where you are in your career.
That sense of humor. Yeah.
That's right. That's
humility.
That is of utmost importance. Yes. Humility and humor. So did these same characteristics, your dedication, your drive, your resolve, provide you with the tools necessary to navigate the unfamiliar or foreign airspace? I know. I just really like all these puns, right? Again, we said humor and humility of being a single parent or a co-parent to your child. And then were there any new skills that you had to learn in the process?
Yeah. Negotiation, obviously.
Yes.
Being able to negotiate and stand your ground, it's been a new skill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also, I think, translated into my military career as well.
You know,
divorce and figuring that out with the co-parenting has helped me out huge, I think, in my career.
Mm-hmm.
The drive, determination, discipline, I mean, you got a kid now.
Yeah.
That is the most important thing. And I think both of us having drive and determination in our own lives for however long, both brought us to the point of this kid is the most important person in this whole situation. Mm-hmm. So let's put our drive, determination, and passion into making sure he gets the best.
Absolutely. All of that energy going into that. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about co-parenting. We focus this podcast around single parenting, but I think that you made a very good point when we first met about how you are a co-parent. And you do practice single parenting on a daily basis because you are here separate from your child's father,
yes.
But you guys do co-parent together. That's what's infused every day. So do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Obviously, it's pretty important to point out that he is very active in his son's life. And I'm grateful for that because there's a lot of times when I'm just lost on how to handle a situation. Sure. I just call him up and he can co-parent. But in the spirit of single parentness, there's sometimes when I just don't have him to call or he's not available. And it's a long span of time. There's weeks, days where it is just me,
mm-hmm.
and responsible for everything for my son.
Well, and there are decisions you have to make in a split second, very similar to decisions you have to make within your career,
yeah.
that you don't have a co-parent at that very moment, and you just have to make that decision. And that's hard.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when it comes to discipline.
Yes.
How to enforce things. What you're going to stress as important and valuable for your child in that mm-hmm. moment. You know, yesterday, for example, my son wanted to just yell at me and scream at me from across the house that he needed a snack, you know, and trying to instill in him the value of getting up and coming to talk to me and asking respectfully for a snack. It took us a couple hours of working through that. Having to emphasize that in a way that would stick with him took a little while. So having two parents in the same room would have been great because then the child is learning that not only is one parent standing up for something that is of certain value, that the other parent is in agreement and both can move out together.
You have that support. It's also important to mention that on a daily basis for a child to see two parents interacting, he may be able to take that interaction as a cue for how he would interact with you.
Yeah.
For instance, if you needed your spouse or partner to do you a favor, like get you a snack or get you something to drink, you would model how you would like for that interaction to occur.
Yeah.
And when there's not another adult in the home or another person in the home, it's very hard to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's those little things, those little nuances that I think we tend to not think about every day. But then when you kind of pan out and you look from a bigger lens, you realize that there are those little things that just add up every day.
Yeah.
So it is co-parenting, absolutely. But there are times when it's going it alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. yeah. So I think I think you make some really good points there. Is there anything that has surprised you, either good or bad, about being a single mom on a day-to-day yeah. basis? I mean, for practical
sure.
purposes.
First of all, how many other people are in this situation? That has been a big surprise. Also, that it's valuable to know that there's other people in this situation and you really aren't totally alone.
Mm-hmm.
There is a huge support system out there in community if you just are willing to reach out.
Sure.
I know when I first started my separation and divorce from my ex-husband, it was challenging to even allow someone to help because I felt like I had to do it all on my own. And once I started realizing that, hey, there are people that are really interested in helping, yeah, finally just kind of releasing and relaxing and letting someone else help was huge.
Mm-hmm.
So
and help along with the humility and the humor, it's another H word
yeah.
that gets us through.
Yeah.
And help is something I think that within the military culture in particular, but in being a woman or being a parent or trying to be everything that we want to be, like you were saying, and that we need to be, it's a hard thing to accept sometimes.
Yes.
Is that help
absolutely.
Word.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because then you take it as something that you're inadequate at.
Yep.
That's not the case at all.
Right. No, no.
In fact, the more that you lean on other people, the more they appreciate it. You can help them in that way as well.
That's right.
When
that's
it comes
right.
down to it.
And help, I think sometimes we just generalize it as a I'm weak and you're strong and you help me. But I think so much of the time strong can help strong and it can look very different than your typical idea of what help looks like. You know, just having someone to talk to is help. And I think that we forget that sometimes. Call it whatever you want to call it, but help can take a lot of different forms.
Yeah. And I'm very grateful for the boss that I have. He is very aware that there's a lot on my plate.
Yeah.
Right? That there's this kiddo at home that I'm working for him, that there's the Air Force side of things of flying and directing operations for the squadron and for being out there to help other people. He sees that, and sometimes he's like, I don't know how you do it. He's like, I have a whole nother spouse that does the things that you have to do all day long. And that's really a relief to know that he even sees that. So
sure.
I'm sure that there's other people that have bosses that do not see that.
Sure.
I can't imagine how difficult that would be.
No, that would be really, really challenging. I'm quite sure. That would be very hard. And that's wonderful. And the fact that he can even articulate that to you, that's huge.
It's so huge.
So big shout out to your boss for that. Right? That's amazing. Yeah. So we were talking about a village. Yes. Right? And we're all pretty familiar with that expression that it does take a village to raise a child. And obviously you do believe that because you were just saying that. But what does Jen's village look like?
So it's me driving down the street, whatever grown-ups are outside. Hey, can you take my son for a little while to go to the store? I do not just drop my kid off at some randoms. But the point is that when you're in the military, it's pretty isolating. We move anywhere as early as 1 year from getting into a station to 3 to 4 years. And process of finding someone that's dependable, that you can trust, takes, 6 to 10 months. It takes a little bit of time. And so while the military creates kind of this community and village, and when you move, you more than likely will run into somebody that you know or have someone that you can trust that's already there, and you have a sponsor parent or sponsor family that you can go to and they can help with finding care, the village grows slowly.
Sure.
So my village is my neighbor. Mm-hmm. She's been so huge and amazing, and she and her husband. And then some other military spouses that have stood up and said, hey, Jen, anytime you need it, call us. And that's it. I have no family around. My family lives up north, or my father lives in Germany. So it's not really something that's conducive to having family around. So I really lean on friends that are local.
Yeah. And I think it's important to throw in there that you are here alone with your son. And so it probably actually takes you double the amount of time because you don't have the spouse at home who is also finding that village.
Yes.
While you're at work.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's totally correct.
Okay.
And then you have the folks that they don't want to take responsibility for your kid. They make it very clear, look, you cannot use me as any kind of emergency contact or anything like that. It's like, wow. Because they feel as though they're being, overextended or whatever. So you got to respect that too.
Sure.
I just can't imagine what it would be like if there weren't people in my life that were like, I will help you. And thinking too about there's a male who's a single parent in my unit.
Mm-hmm.
And how he does it. That's got to be really difficult because there are different things in our culture for men and women and what the expectation is.
Absolutely.
As far as home life and all that and the roles. I don't know how he does it.
Yeah.
It makes me really proud, though, to see his little son in my classroom with my son, and they play great together and he's well adjusted. But yeah, it's got to be difficult all around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And learning all of those roles and figuring out where you fit in all of those roles. I call it just wearing multiple hats.
And you think about
expectations.
Yeah, societal expectations. Yeah, for some reason, we talked about, I think, how when a member's deployed, the people in the unit will go out to the spouses and ask if they need their lawns mowed or if they could use food or something like that. But when it's a woman that's deployed, it's expected that the husband's just got it covered. He can mow his own grass. He can do this. He can do that. Yeah, it's just really difficult to put myself in that place. And I see that with my ex-husband, when he has my son. Luckily, he's in a place where we had already established a pretty good network of people.
Good.
That
a
I
village.
Knew. Yeah, a village there that he taps into very often. And my son has someone that he goes to see who has a grandson the same age. And it's like family. It's really cool.
Good.
But if he didn't have that, I think as a society, really wrap our arms around single moms.
Mm-hmm.
But single dads.
Yeah.
Kind of out there on their own a little bit. Feel a little bit of a wave of compassion from the community. It's starting to grow more and more. And,
good.
And things like, and I'm going off a little bit on a tangent, but things like what happened in Vegas with the shootings,
mm-hmm.
and some of those others, I think we're starting to understand a little bit more of how disconnected we are.
Yes.
And how much more compassion we need to have for one another and as human beings.
The incident in Las Vegas that Jen is referring to here is the shooting that occurred on the night of October 1st, 2017, when a gunman opened fire on a crowd of concert goers at the Route 91 Harvest Music Festival on the Las Vegas Strip, leaving 58 people dead and 851 people injured. At the time of this podcast episode recording, this shooting was known as the deadliest mass shooting committed by an individual in the United States.
And as disconnected as we are, we often think because of technology and because of social media and things like that, that we're extremely connected. So that's a great point where if we could wake up and realize how, in fact, disconnected we are,
yeah.
We could connect through all of these amazing avenues, technology, yes. Social media, support groups on social media platforms, yeah. Virtual conferencing with each other.
Yeah.
You know, you move away from each other, but you can still have a virtual village.
Yeah. It can help. It's still not the same
as having someone to go have dinner with. It's absolutely not. Nope.
Or have their kids to play with so that you're not the primary person having to play Legos all day with your kids.
You're right. So in talking about all of this, I think that it's extremely important to go into the next topic of self-care. And I think that obviously it's a critical component of high-stress occupations, like the occupation that you have. And then also your position of being a parent. I mean, that's a high-stress occupation in my opinion. So you fly helicopters and you raise a child.
Mm-hmm.
So do you find that you have enough time for self-care?
Oh, yeah. You make time for self-care.
Good. That is the correct answer. Yeah.
Every morning I wake up at 4:30, and from 4:30 till 5:30, 6 a.m. is my time to do what I need to do. I generally work out, but sometimes I will meditate. Sometimes I'll yoga. Sometimes I will just write or read, just relax in the quiet and reflect or journal. So yeah, absolutely. You have to take that time. I find that after 6 a.m., my day becomes more owned by others.
You know, absolutely. That's a great way to put it. Yeah.
My son, my work. But that time from 4:30 to 6 is mine, and I make it.
That's good. And that's so super important. But I think that sometimes people don't make time for that. And I think that's where they get in trouble. That's where it becomes problematic when they can't make time for self-care.
Yeah. I find that if I don't wake up at 4:30, I mean, there's sometimes when I don't, I like to sleep a little bit. But if I don't, then I just don't feel good about the rest of the day. There's something just, I don't feel like maybe I ate too much or something doesn't feel good or
otherwise. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. Well, there's this really important saying about putting the oxygen mask on first.
Yeah, I've heard
right?
that a lot. Yeah.
And that has just spoken volumes to me as a single mom or as a co-parent myself. It's spoken volumes to me, and I remind myself constantly, if I can't have my oxygen first, then I'm not helping anybody.
Yeah. I struggle with that a little bit because I feel like it's a band-aid for a symptom of an overall problem, and it kind of goes back to the community and village thing. If we had our community and village, if we just allowed people to just be normal people and accepted them as their mistakes and their flaws and everything, instead of putting all this pressure to be perfect, maybe we wouldn't need so many oxygen masks.
Oh, man.
Right?
Yes.
We could just accept ourselves and accept each other, and it's okay to be not great at this. It's okay to not do these things for yourself or for your kid. Like, just give yourself that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. There's so much pressure that we find ourselves unable to breathe and therefore in need of oxygen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Not to say that you don't need oxygen.
Of course. I mean, if you can't breathe, you got to have a little bit of help there. But no, you're exactly right. If the expectations weren't so high and
if we weren't so isolated.
Yeah.
You know, you watch these videos of a comedian that I saw where it was when we were kids, our moms had the special cake for when guests came over. You know, you weren't allowed to eat that special cake for when guests came. And you always had coffee ready. And just in case the guests came over and you were so excited to see someone come to your house, invite them in and talk to them and chit chat. You always make time. And now you hear somebody knock on the door. Everybody could be quiet. Shh, 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 shh. Get under the couch.
We're not
Nobody's
home.
Here. Nobody's home. Right?
You got it.
So we just need to connect again.
Yeah.
Let people in.
Mm-hmm.
Scary. Mm-hmm. So
it is scary.
But at the same time, it's one of those things I think that maybe we just chill and have a little bit more compassion for one another and let each other in and stop looking for what's wrong in ourselves or in others.
And to stop competing with each other, you know, to make it really truly like a village where we all play a role and everybody's role is just as important as the other person's.
Yeah.
There's a lawyer in a village and there's a garbage man in the village or a garbage woman in the village. They're just as important
and
their roles
everybody.
Are just as essential.
We need everybody.
Yep. It's so true. So kind of in relation to self-care,
yeah,
or just maybe self in general, ideally when we need it the most, or at least when I do, I have this voice in my head, right, that tells me to keep going. And I'm just wondering if there's any like specific moments that you can recall when you have heard that particular voice.
There's all kinds of things. Walking into work with all the folks that I work with, these amazing human beings that have taken an oath and given up their own liberty and freedom of choice to defend our nation, what that means. And they're beautiful and amazing and thoughtful and they care. And that's the voice. And then I pick my son up and when he runs up to me and gives me a great big hug and tells me he loves me and he's so excited to see me, that keeps me going, at least through dinner. And then
and then he asks you for a snack later.
Yeah, so.
That's amazing.
It's really true.
Does. So being in the military and especially a position such as yours, obviously it has its risks and its dangers, right?
Oh my gosh, yes.
So how does this affect you as a mother, especially a single mother?
Okay, so before I had my son, before I even thought about having a kid, before I even thought that anything would ever be in this world that would depend on me, I flew not risk averse. I took risk. I was like, whatever, I will get the job done. I'll take the mission. I'll do it. It'll be fine. We'll make it through it. Like, it's not a big deal. As soon as Henry showed up, holy smokes. I don't think it's such a good idea. Why would we take this as a risk? Let's really think about this. I need to go home to my kid. There was one example. So I deployed like the day that he turned one. I went to Qatar.
Oh, my
Qatar. Yeah, it was.
Goodness.
It tore my heart out. It was the worst. Women do it all the time.
Sure.
It's so sad. I see it. But in my own experience, I left and I was there for 4 months. And this one tradition that they had in the office that I worked in was there were roundabouts and we had this van and we were all operators. It was the A3 division, all pilots, all navigators. Like, we were all just the combat vets that were all out. And they had this tradition where at the roundabouts on base, they would drive as fast as they could in these circles. And it was to see if they could flip the van. I had just left my son who was 1 year old. And I was like, this is not how I'm leaving this earth. This is not it. And so I made a big deal about, like, stopping that. And I got a lot of heat for it, you know? Like, oh, you're not one of the guys. You're not one of the team, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I am 100% part of this team that's not going to roll over a van. So let's stop doing it. But before, when I was a captain, before I had my son, heck yeah, let's...
You would have been right in the middle of that, right? You would have been the one to turn it over first.
Right.
And isn't it interesting that just it was 1 year old? So just this human that had experienced 12 months of life has changed your entire trajectory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting.
Yeah. And I see that. And I think now as I, you know, as I've gotten promoted and I'm in charge of people, I think about it more.
Sure. Of course.
On how and they're
about
taking
their families.
Risks. Yes.
Yeah.
And their families.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Been a big impact on me. So
yeah.
Whereas before I would have just thought, hey, you're just being risk averse. This is get out there. Like, we can do this. Not anymore. Let's really make sure this risk is worth it.
That's right. Yeah, having kids can change you in so many ways. And obviously that's a huge way that having your child changed you. So to wrap it up, I would just love to know if you have any words of wisdom that you would like to offer. And you have shared so many words of wisdom, so if this feels like you're on the spot, it's okay, you can pass. But what words of wisdom would you offer to other single and or co-parenting military parents? And it doesn't just have to be women.
Don't take no as an answer. Always find a way to yes in everything you do. Like,
I love that. I love that.
If you find like a block or something that's not working, find a way to yes. There is a way to do it. You can. And there are people out there that are going to help you and make it work for you. And you are going to find ways to do it that are, sometimes you got to think outside the box and be creative, but don't take no as an answer.
Through humor, humility, and help.
Yes.
Right?
Right. Nice.
Fantastic. Jen, thank you so much for joining us. You have had so many words of wisdom and so much inspiration to offer to all of us. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Before Jen and I finished up for the day, there was one more thing that I wanted to ask her about. As I mentioned, when she and I first met, I very quickly realized that her duties went well beyond being a single mom and a pilot. She displayed a passionate drive to inspire young women and minorities to dream bigger. So I asked her to tell us a little bit about her project and the motivation behind its creation.
The Malouz Project. It's something that a girlfriend and I started. She's also a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, and she was the previous commander of this unit. And we just were sitting around one day at her house, and we started sharing stories about where we had been. She's a combat pilot, had been in some pretty hairy things, and we just talked about some of the experiences we had and realized how much they were similar. We had never been stationed together before. We had only known each other for about 6 or 7 months of our careers that we've had for 17, 18 years. And to have stories that were so similar, it was intense, you know? Like, you think sometimes that you're experiencing something as a woman, that it's just you, that you're being too sensitive. And then when you start talking to somebody else that you've never met before, and they are saying almost the exact same thing of what they experienced, you know then it's not you being sensitive. You start connecting, like, there's really something that we can work and improve on here to help others. And so we started mentoring, read a lot of business books about some of the things that women executives have experienced. I think really one of the biggest reasons that I started this project was my mom, who was riding along in the car with me. And she said, "Jen, women just aren't supposed to be in combat." And I looked at her and I said, "Mom, I am a combat search and rescue pilot." So there was a benefit to it that kind of not telling her everything that I was going through when I was deployed was working. Like, she thought that I was just a paper pusher. But on the other side, it's like this narrative, this propaganda that is going on that there are not women in combat. And we're still working through that because of this belief for some reason that women aren't on the front lines, but we are in many ways every day. And whether or not they're in the SF units out there in Humvees, women are in combat. So it's kind of a illogical argument that we're having in society right now, proving whether or not women can or can't. I think that that's kind of detracting from the whole point.
I was fortunate to have read one of Jen's blogs titled The Power of She. There was an excerpt from it that particularly stood out for me. She said, "I run into young girls often while wearing my uniform out and about in town. I usually wear my flight suit, and I'm amazed at how many girls run up to me and tell me that they didn't know that women could be pilots. Gosh, girl, you can. Or I meet young women in the Air Force who don't think they can fly, have a family, and still make rank. It's not easy, but we can do it." So I asked Jen to tell me a little bit about this excerpt.
And this is the interesting thing. A lot of my friends that are male tell me that their daughters are shocked to know that this is even a possibility for them. And this is something else that Carrie talked about that she experienced with some of her leadership that I also experienced. There were generals that we worked for, and the general that she worked for said, "You have to keep wearing your flight suit because you represent what I was not able to do in the 1980s because I was not allowed to even try." And so there's that huge responsibility that we take very seriously, that it's important to carry this message that we're here and you can do this. You can dream bigger. Yeah, changing the milieu.
If you are interested in reading more blogs and learning more about Jen and Carrie's project, you can visit their site at themilieux.org. Again, that's themilieux.org. There you will find posts designed to challenge stereotypes and create community, discover obstacles, and advocate for those passionate about creating change.
Jen also mentioned something that I think is not directly related to the topic of single parents in military, but can relate very much to women who are single parents in the military, in that there's this greater narrative that continues to exist about women not being in combat. There's a belief for some reason that women are not on the front line, but they are. Jen even details a conversation with a family member about this. It's interesting on many fronts, but relating to single parents, and in this case, single mothers in military combat, it's important to emphasize not only the dangers that they face, the stress, and all that is connected to combat deployment for mothers, but also these myths and misconceptions that can sometimes take place in our society and in the communities and families that women in military depend on for support. To boot, if you're a single parent, It's an added stress to try to prove or educate those in your corner about your role in the military. And if that role is minimized due to you being female or due to you being female in a combat role, that can undoubtedly add to the level of stress and other issues that you're already facing as a single parent. I really appreciated Jen's candid story about this. I can imagine there are others who can relate.
Brandi Curry served in the United States Army from 2002 until 2009 as a combat medic. During her service, she experienced life in a dual soldier home, a single parent soldier home after her divorce, and then back to a dual soldier home after she remarried. After Brandi's service in the Army ended in 2009, she then became a military spouse until just this past year when her current husband left the service after 17 years. Brandi is the mother of 6 children ranging in age from 2 to 17 years old. She is currently in school working on her master's degree in social work at Florida State University. Brandi's evolution of roles and relationships with the military sparked our curiosity, in particular her role as a single mother soldier. During this portion of this episode, we have asked Brandi to share her experience with deployment as a single mother. Thank you so much for joining us today for this portion of our podcast episode on single parenting.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really happy to be here and talk to you.
Well, thank you. We are delighted to have you. So I'm going to go ahead and start with the first question. Your single parenthood journey actually started well before your divorce. Can you tell us a little bit about the experience of the birth of your child while your husband at the time was overseas?
Sure. Well, at the time, we were both stationed at Fort Bragg in North Carolina. We were both active duty, and he was getting ready to deploy. And, of course, I was pregnant at the time. I also had a 3-year-old little girl. And so my son was due in September, and they were supposed to leave in August for deployment. There was no way that he could get out of the deployment. So pretty much I just prepared to be a single parent there at Fort Bragg while he was gone. So he was gone, and I ended up working through, you know, the complete pregnancy up until the very day that I went into labor. I remember I was giving shot at one of the local clinics, and the guy that I gave the shot to said, that was a little rough. And of course, I'm like very smooth with my shots. I said, oh, yeah. I said, I just had a contraction. He said, I think you might need to go home. So I went home, and I remember laying down and going, I think I'm going to have the baby today. So, of course, being a single parent and being alone, I didn't have very many friends in the area, and I didn't have family around. So I ended up taking my daughter to one of my neighbor friends, and I literally hopped in the car, drove to the grocery store to pick up some snacks because I knew I wouldn't be able to eat. I drove myself to the hospital, I walked upstairs, and proceeded to hop in a bed and, you know, start going for labor. And I was in labor for about, it was like 21 hours.
Oh my goodness.
Before I gave, yeah, it was always long for me, but I ended up going into labor and having my son. And his father, of course, was deployed and would not come home for 8 months after he was born. So being that this was my second child, I ended up having him. And then the next day I was able to leave, and I remember walking down to the car, grabbing the car seat right after I gave birth practically, walking upstairs, putting him in the car seat, getting the checks, and then driving back to my apartment, picking up my daughter, and then going to the grocery store. And that was that, you know. There was no family. There was no one to help out. It was just us, you know.
Yeah, that's such a powerful example of what so many military spouses experience. And obviously it was a glimpse for you how life would be as a single parent. And what I mean by single parent is no longer married to the father of your children.
Right. Absolutely. It definitely was a glimpse into, I guess, what to expect when everything is on your shoulders and you are responsible for, you know, making sure that you are being the soldier you need to be and making sure that your children are taken care of and all this by yourself.
Yeah, that's a lot of experience, and that takes a lot of courage, and it takes a lot of strength as well. I wanted to talk to you in particular about your experience with deployment as a single mother, and I would love to know, when you found out that you would be deploying for the first time, what did you do to prepare that may have looked different for you as a single mother than for others who were not single parents?
Okay, well, for me, so after my time in the active duty Army, I went into the Army National Guard active duty. So basically, Florida's Army National Guard, but active duty. And so I was recruiting at the time, and they needed a combat medic. And so at this time, I was, you know, a single mom. My ex-husband was stationed in Korea. He was not active in the children's lives. And so I was still a soldier. And still being that single mom, I guess I was more in the civilian side of things too. So I was kind of in between two worlds, being active duty Army National Guard. And so, you know, I was going to work every day doing my recruiting, and then, you know, the kids at night and when they're sick and all these other things that pop up. So when I found out I was getting deployed, I thought, what in the world? Well, on one hand, I was excited because I really felt like as a soldier, this is kind of what you train for. The whole pinnacle of your existence as a soldier is to one day be able to defend your country or whatever your mission is. And so I was nervous just because I was a single mom, and with him not being involved at all, I didn't know, okay, what am I going to do here? So for me, I had a home. I ended up having to rent the home out because, of course, I'm footing the bill sure. on my own here, and so I need to make sure that you know, there's money coming in. I started packing, and of course, I'm still working, so I'm still recruiting. I'm packing for myself. I'm packing for the kids. I am going through, and now most soldiers have to do a power of attorney. So I had to do a power of attorney as well, a will. I put my children in the private school so that I would feel like they were in a smaller environment. I guess I thought it would be a better environment for them while I was gone. But just arranging for their regular doctor visits and all these things, kind of developing a family care plan so that would be easier for those taking care of my children to provide the care that I would normally do. So, you know, on top of work, I had the kids, and normally, you know, if you have a two-parent household, you've got a husband or a spouse who is there to kind of carry the load for you, which is what military spouses do, is they allow the soldier to commit to their country and fulfill their duties. But, you know, as a single soldier, you're doing that on your own.
Right, and so, fulfilling the duties of your home as well.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Which is kind of obviously where we were going with the title of this podcast episode being double duties. And really we say double duties, but we mean multiple duties when we say that, because obviously you were serving as both parents. You were serving as a soldier in addition to all of the other roles that you were taking. So during this process, did you have a support system when you were preparing for this deployment? And if you did, were they helpful? And if you didn't, what would have been helpful to you in preparation for this deployment?
So for me personally, that is a question I'm kind of in the middle on, because a support system as in I did have someone who would be taking care of my children. But one thing that I now look back on and think, oh, wow, this would have helped had I guess, enlisted or had somebody that could take care of my children that I was really confident in. Because they were there and they were ready to take care of my children, but I wasn't very confident in the care that they would be providing for my children. So on one hand, yes, they were there. On the other hand, that was pretty much all they were there for, was when you leave, here, I've got your children. So it would have been nice to have maybe some child care or somebody to step in and be able to take care of my children before I left, even for a little bit, so that I could get these things done that I needed without having children with me.
Right.
You know, that could be very stressful.
Sure.
To be able to try to do everything and have your toddlers and your kid, well, she was in first grade, kindergarten and first grade, with you. That's kind of stressful when you have to get everything done by a deadline and still provide care for your children.
Right.
So, yeah. So, a full support system, no. Mm-hmm. Partial support system, yes.
Right.
And
they can certainly take, you know, a support system can look differently for everybody. And certainly part of your support system could look very different than another part of your support system. You could have somebody to physically support you, like taking care of your children, but maybe not on the emotional side of it, which is kind of what it sounded like it was for you. And I know that when you and I had initially spoken, you mentioned that you put your children in private school to kind of serve as an emotional support, so to speak, for your children. Can you speak on that a little bit? Will you elaborate for us?
Sure. In my younger years, growing up, I went to this specific private school. And so it was a smaller school. I knew the teachers there. I knew the principal, the pastor. For me, faith is a big thing. That was an environment that I was familiar with, and I knew that as long as my children were at that school and in that environment, being that it was smaller, that they would get the care and the one-on-one attention that they would need while they were at school and during school hours. And so that's why I put my son in the preschool there. So he had a full-day program 5 days a week. And then my daughter was in kindergarten and then first grade while I was deployed. And so she had the loving, caring teachers that I knew to kind of be there and support her in case she had any anxiety about me being gone.
Sure.
So in that sense, it was nice because I did have that reassurance that while she was at school, she wasn't lost in a crowd somewhere. She was being loved and taken care of by the people that I knew the best, that would provide that love the best.
No doubt. And there's this expression that so many of us are familiar with and that we've talked to the other single parents that we've interviewed for this episode about it taking a village to raise a child. And it sounds like while maybe your village wasn't humongous, you certainly did a very good job of preparing a village for your children during your deployment. So I think that's amazing.
Thank you. I really appreciate you saying that. You know, at the time, I didn't know if I was preparing enough. I was going to be providing that safe space for my children, but I'm looking back at it now and seeing that, okay, I did the best that I could with
right.
the resources I had available.
That's right. And you should give yourself a pat on the back for that.
I will. Thank you.
So, Brandy, you did a blog interview with the early intervention team back in August of 2016, and you mentioned in that blog that the main concern that you had while you were deployed was that your children would be emotionally scarred. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and the things that you did in preparation to combat this from happening?
Yes. Well, I was younger, and so as far as knowing what would have lessened the emotional scarring, I was still very naive to, but I was a mom of two children, and that kind of matures you. So I started thinking about all the different things that I could do to prepare them to lessen the blow, I guess you could say. So at first, when I found I was going to be deployed, I made a calendar of the days until I would leave so that they could see visually. So it wasn't just one day I came home and mom was gone, or they woke up one morning and they're, okay, mom's going to the airport. It was, they were kind of preparing themselves. So I'm not sure if that was helpful, but that was one of the things that I did. I also sat down with both of them. It was harder, I think, for my six-year-old because she understood completely that I was going away.
Right.
Whereas my three-year-old was kind of aloof. You know, they only have so much cognitive ability
sure.
as far as wrapping their head, you know, around what's going on. So they each were given pictures of me. I spent time alone with them. I remember taking them camping and just explaining to them that I was going away to help other children just like them.
Mm-hmm.
As a combat medic, my role varies differently from, say, an infantryman or whatnot. So I know a lot of children get in their heads, oh, you know, my dad's going away to fight the bad guys or whatever. But for me, it was, okay, what am I going to be doing? I'm going to be going over there to help others. So they were able to see the correlation between, okay, mom takes care of us and mom's going to take care of other children.
Right.
And as soon as that's done, mom will be back. So that's pretty much the things that I did to enable them to have a better experience, hopefully lessening the emotional scarring that I was not sure was going to take place or was not going to take place,
sure.
you know, because
yeah.
I had never done that before.
Right. Well, I think you did the very best you could possibly do. It speaks volumes about the kind of mother you are because you did developmentally appropriate things with your children. You had conversations with them. You gave them a visual. I don't really know if you could have done that any better. So I think you did a great job.
Thank you.
And when you and I talked for the first time, there was something, Brandy, that really stood out to me, and it was your story about the reintegration process from deployment. So I'd love for you to share with the listeners what you shared with me when we talked initially.
So upon coming back from deployment, it was a little different than I think most people coming back. Most people that are in the military have a spouse or a family that are coming back. They're meeting them on the field. It's a very joyous time. For me, I came back and I kind of went through the motions and filled out the paperwork and slept an awful lot and prepared to come see my children. And when I got home, it was very overwhelming because I pretty much was given my keys to my house, keys to my vehicle, and my checkbook, and then my children. And that was it. so I was left right away to take care of my children, to go back to normal life, I guess you could say. I had no groups to go to. You know, there were no therapists asking me how I was. There was no explanation of how life might be after deployment. No one asked questions. I know that, like, now, when my husband would come back from deployment, people would ask questions all the time. And, hey, how are you? How was it? Mm-hmm. How do you feel? You doing okay? And no one asked me. And mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because, as a mother, we're just seen as being this strong, really being just a single parent, you know, just they can handle anything, but no one asked me. And so it was almost as if I was alone, you know. Mm-hmm. I had my children, but now we have this whole process of reintegration and learning to, like, live together again and getting them to understand that, okay, mom wasn't going to go away. You know, mom was here. Mm-hmm. Just because mom goes to the bathroom doesn't mean that mom's running away.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
So those are the things that I experienced, and it made it really difficult coming back and not having that support.
I can imagine. What got you through that, Brandy?
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, everyone has their different ways to cope and deal with that. But for me, I would say my children, my faith. I don't know if a little bit of it is resiliency.
I would say a large portion of it is.
Yeah, I'm very goal-oriented. So when I came back and I saw that I had these different things that I needed to tackle, after going through a couple weeks of kind of being down and depressed, I guess you could say, and feeling very alone, I engaged that inner strength. And I'm talking to myself here. I'm like, listen, we've got to get it together. We have two children. You just got to take care of them. And so I set aside time for the children and I to, you know, to be alone, to just kind of relax. I remember we went to Disney World together. I made sure to stick with going to church. I mean, I didn't feel like engaging in my faith, I guess, at the time, but I forced myself to, because I knew that a lot of times when we're hesitant to do something, if we could just get out of the box or just get outside and engage, then that helps a lot. Staying inside and being sad doesn't get you anywhere. But if you're able to just get out and see the sunshine and engage the world around you, it makes it a lot easier. So I would say my faith and just setting down realistic goals for me to accomplish, to get my life back in order so that I could resume how it was before I left.
Sure. And I think that you can be an inspiration to all of us. And sometimes those goals, they don't have to be huge goals. They can be little goals, like get up in the morning and get out of bed. And actually, for some people, that is a huge goal. Baby steps, just taking one step at a time to get to that goal. And it doesn't matter how long it takes to get to the goal, but what matters is that you get there. And that's what it sounds like you did.
Absolutely. And if you make a visual list, being able to see those things, no matter how small they are, checked off.
Yeah.
It does wonders for morale.
It does.
For your personal morale.
Do you feel like there's one thing or a few things in particular that would have been helpful during your experience as a single mother in the military that you did not have?
Well, I think, looking back on it, we have this thing in the Army. It's called the Family Readiness Group.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, years later, I would become a family readiness group leader for the hospital in Germany. And one thing that I realized in being a family readiness group leader was that a lot of times the single soldier parents aren't really included. It's not intentional. It's just that the natural order of things is to cater to families, you know, because that's it. But I think that a lot of times we fail to see that family could mean a number of things. It could mean two moms, two dads, a mom and a dad, children and a mother, children and a father. And so for me, I think that a more focused availability from the FRG towards myself and my children would have been nice. It would have been nice to have that support, knowing that, okay, yes, I'm a single mother, but I'm going to be going through certain things that maybe a family won't be going through. And then, you know, having people who were educated on that situation. The other thing is, it would have been so great, and I know that things have advanced now, but to be able to Skype with your children, I think that would be wonderful to be able to engage more. I know that around the holidays, they'll have different things set up for soldiers, but if children were able to see their parents on a more regular basis, I think that would be an amazing way to connect while the parent is deployed.
Mm-hmm. And maybe prepare for the transition in a different way.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So thank goodness for technology in that respect, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, you have an amazing story, and you serve as an inspiration to me, certainly, and I'm sure to a lot of our listeners, and I'm sure that a lot of our listeners are in a similar situation to you. And obviously, you're not the spokesperson for all single military service members, but I would love for you to share just some words of wisdom that you would want to offer to other single military parents.
The first thing I would say is make sure before you leave that those caring for your children are individuals who you are comfortable with, because the more comfortable you are with the people looking after your children, the better experience it will be, the less stress, you know, knowing that your children are 100% loved, taken care of, provided for. That way you're able to do your job, your mission when you're overseas. That's one of the things that stands out to me. Secondly, I would love to say that your children will not be scarred. I guess I became fixated on, this is going to scar my children. My children aren't going to get over this. And here I am years later, and I have my oldest two who experienced this are very well-adjusted children. And I sit down with them even today. You know, I was speaking with my son, and I said, tell me how you felt back then. And he said, you know, you came back, and after a couple months, we're a family again. And so my daughter remembers a little more of it. And, you know, she says, I missed you. But once you came back and we were together, then all was well. So while you're stressed right now and overwhelmed by everything that you have to accomplish, the good news is that children are resilient. As long as you're taking care of yourself and making sure you get that self-care time as well, your children are going to adapt and overcome and be able to look back on this and not look back on it in a negative light, but look back on it and say, wow, my mom or my dad served their country, and then they came home and they were mom or dad again.
That's right. Well, I think that those are amazing words of wisdom, and I think they are words of wisdom that all of us benefit from, not just single military parents. Brandy, was there anything else that you would like to add that we did not talk about?
Just that there, being in the military, whether you're in a dual military home or a single soldier parenting home, all those roles are just so important. And I think that if you're taking care of yourself, then you are going to be the better parent. And I think often we forget about ourselves and we forget to take care of ourselves and make sure that our needs are met and when we fall short as parents. But as long as we're doing the best we can, being the best parent we can and taking care of ourselves, then we are able to move forward and just be the best parent, the best soldier that we can be. So that's pretty much all I have to say, really.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And I think that that's applicable across everything. If you don't take care of yourself, it's going to be mighty hard for you to do anything else. That's a life lesson for all of us. And Brandy, I appreciate you being here with us today. And this has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Barry.
Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. If you'd like to hear more episodes from Anchored, check out the links provided on our website, or you can go directly to iTunes. Just enter MFLN Anchored Podcast in your search engine to get you there. We offer continuing education credits for most of our programming. Information about that can be found on our website, or you can just email our team at mflnfamilydevelopment@gmail.com. We hope you will join us next time. This material is based on work supported by the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Office of Military Family Readiness Policy. U.S. Department of Defense award number is 2015-48770-24368.